Earlier this week, one of the world's most controversial leaders, Libya's Muammar Gaddafi, was chosen to head the African Union. Join me now to discuss Gaddafi and his plans for the AU is George Joffe, head of the Center, I guess, spelt in the French way, Center for North African Studies at Cambridge University. I'm very pleased to welcome him to Underreported today. Hello.
Hello.
How did someone as divisive as Muammar Gaddafi become the next president of the African Union?
Well, really, it's Buggin's turn. That's to say that he was responsible for creating the African Union in 1999. And really, as a result of that, in the end, he had to be its president. And his chance has now come. It was time for a North African leader to be head of the African Union. And so the leaders of Africa decided they would elect him. It was made relatively easy for them because no other leaders from North Africa turned up. In fact, half the African presidents didn't come at all. So, in a way, he was a shoo-in, and as such, he's now president for the next year.
Well, being president of the AU doesn't usually get that much attention. Does the position have much power?
No, it doesn't. It got so much attention on this occasion, I think, for two main reasons. Number one, it was Colonel Gaddafi who was going to be it, and everyone knew that was going to be the case. And number two, he came announcing that he was the King of Kings in Africa, supported by 100 African kings. And that caused a certain amount of ruckus amongst the delegates and a certain amount of irritation, too. As a result, although they appointed him, they're not too pleased about the decision they've taken.
There's also the matter of changing the name of the organization from the African Union to the African Authority. What does that suggest?
Well, actually, the name of the African Union's not changed. What's changed is the name of the post and the organizations he's going to head. That's what's become the African Authority. And in fact, the delegates did that partly to diminish his status. He wanted it to be the African government. But they're determined he's not going to interfere with the activities of independent states. And therefore, they decided that it would become not a government, but an authority, a much more general word with much less significance. And they've also rejected virtually all of his proposals to date. Indeed, President Museveni of Uganda got very irritated indeed yesterday about some of the colonel's proposals, and the two of them had a stand-up row.
So he isn't respected all that much throughout Africa, although King Tosso Gbagwidi of Beni called Gaddafi the same thing he had called himself, the King of Kings, at the ceremony.
That's true, but I'm afraid the king is not regarded by African leaders as a political leader. He's what President Museveni calls a cultural leader. That's somebody who, although he may enjoy a prestigious position in South Africa, has no political power at all. And the president made it quite clear that he was not prepared to tolerate interventions in the political sphere from people like that. So the colonel's support base is, in fact, rather weak. And I don't really think he's going to be able to achieve very much.
But he does have high hopes, doesn't he? Is this all part of Libya's gradual emergence from the diplomatic deep freeze since it took official responsibility for the downing of Pan Am Flight 103 in 2003?
I don't think so. This goes much further back. It's connected to that. It's connected to the United Nations sanctions, too. In 1997, it became evident that the sanctions weren't going to be maintained and that it would be mainly the African states that were going to break them. And Colonel Gaddafi, in response, decided that his allegiance should no longer be with the Arab world. It should be with Africa instead. And as part of that process, he proposed to renovate what used to be the Organization of African Unity, the old Pan-Arab organization. And the African Union, in a sense, was his child, is what he thought of. He put it forward. He persuaded our African leaders to support it. And he hoped very much that he would play a major role in it and that it would be the beginning of a single government for the whole of Africa.
Part of his vision is to create a United States of Africa, isn't it?
That's what he would like to do. He claims it should be like the United States of Europe, although, in fact, the European Union is very far from what he would like to achieve. He wants a single army, a single government, a single administration, and, of course, he wants to head it. Now, that's what African leaders certainly don't want, and that's why they've, in some ways, sidelined him on this occasion.
Well, it would give the African Union some power, and hasn't it proved rather toothless in dealing with the continent's problems until now?
Right. If you look at the problems in Darfur, where the African Union's directly involved, it's not proved to be very successful. But that really isn't the point. There's always a struggle in Africa between the idea of pan-Africanism, the idea of all Africa coming together as a single cultural and therefore political unit, and the idea of independent states. And the evidence has been, as it's been in the Arab world and elsewhere, that states are very determined to remain independent, and they don't want to see their sovereignty being cut away into some regional organization. So I don't think the African Union is going to achieve very much more, simply because the states concerned don't want it to, even if Colonel Gaddafi does.
Isn't Sudan a reflection of the kinds of problems that anyone would face in trying to come up with a pan-African approach? Sudan in the north being the Arab-Muslim part of North Africa, and then in its own south, black Christians, although there are plenty of black Muslims in sub-Saharan Africa as well. But there just seems to be such a divide in Africa that, and then there's such a divide politically. Unlike the EU, Africa is a mix of democracies and autocratic states. Could they even get along?
And there's no way, in fact, in which Africa is going to form a single political unit. There are sectarian divides, ethnic divides, and political divides too, as you point out. And then again, African states often have competing agendas in terms of the territories they want to control. And although they're governed by a general principle that says they won't question the borders in Africa at all, they've accepted the borders laid down during the colonial era, nonetheless, tensions do exist as a result. And there are constant little moments of violence between African states. And you're right, Sudan in many respects does reflect a lot of the problems, but so does Chad, for example. So do most of the Sahelian states. And then states in the south, states such as Nigeria, have their own sectarian problems as well. In fact, beyond that, the main states in Africa, that's to say Nigeria, Egypt, and South Africa, aren't going to accept any idea that they should in some way be absorbed into a general regional organization governing their futures and their ambitions.
And Gaddafi has said that the other African countries should model themselves on Libya. What does that mean?
Oh, that means they should all become what he calls the Jamahariya, the state of the masses, a system that he claims is an example of direct popular democracy and the ideal political system for states all over the world. In fact, of course, it's not like that at all. Although Libyans supposedly do govern their own political futures, in reality, those are governed by Colonel Gaddafi himself, and he won't tolerate any disagreement with his ideas. So it's democracy under considerable pressure, and other African states, whether they're autocracies or not, don't particularly want to imitate the kinds of mistakes and kinds of decisions that he may have made. Libya is a very personalized dictatorship, in fact, and they're certainly not going to go along the same road.
But if there were a bit more power in the African Union, wouldn't that mean that situations like the one in Zimbabwe would be dealt with a bit more effectively? Zimbabwe wasn't even a topic of discussion at the most recent meeting, despite all of the problems there.
Well, don't forget that Colonel Gaddafi rather approves of President Mugabe, so it would have been difficult for it to have been one. But Zimbabwe represents a very, very particular problem. One of the reasons why African states find Zimbabwe so difficult to deal with is that Robert Mugabe was a leading leader for the fight for independence. And they feel, in a sense, that to turn on him now is to decry the whole value of that struggle for independence. And that's inhibited them a lot. It's one of the reasons why they pushed so hard for some kind of compromise between the president and his main rival, Morgan Tsvangirai. And I think, to that extent, the African Union really couldn't do very much in those circumstances anyway. What they would accept is the idea of a union, maybe like the European Union, that provided a common basis for them without damaging any of their privileges and prerogatives. The problem is that's not Colonel Gaddafi's idea, and I think that, to a very large extent, explains their hostility towards him.
Well, he said he wants his plan for the United States of Africa to be approved by the next meeting, which is in July. Has he proposed any plans for addressing the immediate problems of Africa, like health issues, armed conflicts, economic development?
To be fair to him, he has on repeated occasions tried to put forward plans to resolve armed conflicts, particularly in the Sahara and Sahel regions of Africa. But in reality, they've been unrealistic, and they've never actually worked. So I don't think he's got any concrete plans. He would argue that if you adopt the political system in Libya, the problems will resolve themselves, and that therefore the answer lies in the underlying political solutions, not really in specific problems and specific solutions for them. Now, that's not an option that's going to actually appeal much to African leaders. And therefore, I don't really think he's going to achieve very much during his year in office. It will be full of an awful lot of display, but the concrete achievements are going to be very limited indeed.
I would assume that people who are hoping for positive changes in Africa are more likely to be looking at South Africa as a model than Libya.
You're quite right. They'll be looking north and south, in fact, to the three great states of Africa for some kind of solution. And South Africa will be the one. And, of course, there's a new government coming in, a new presidency with Jacob Zuma, and that may hold all sorts of promises for Africa. People are very hopeful indeed that there are going to be real changes taking place in South Africa and that this may have some real significance for the continent overall. But it's not just in South Africa. Some of the West African states, too, seem to be achieving effective democratic systems. People hope that that will work. There's even some vague hope that the Sudanese problem may resolve itself, although it's complicated by accusations against the Sudanese president and by the ongoing problems of Darfur. If that can be resolved and a United Nations force is going to move into Darfur in the next couple of weeks, that might again help to create in Africa a sense of hope instead of the desperation that's been there for so many years.
Well, what does all of this mean for the tenure of Colonel Gaddafi as the head of the African Union? Is he just going to be frustrated by the fact that nobody wants to go along with his plans?
Oh, he's certainly going to be frustrated. But he will at least be able to lay claim to whatever successes there may be, and I'm quite certain that he will. He's very good at dealing with disappointment. It's happened so often. And I think to that extent, he will try and claim responsibility for any of the successes that Africa achieves and will disclaim responsibility for any of the mistakes that occur. It's going to be quite an interesting time, and it should be full of quite a lot of display.
I want to thank you so much for being our guest on today's Underreported. I've been talking to George Jaffe, head of the Center for North African Studies at Cambridge University.
Thank you.